everybody. You're listening to the ICHL podcast powered by aesthetics.info. I'm your host, Tony Pompaselli, the GM of the Saskatoon Sharpshooters. And this week, we're handicapping the conference races and giving out some mid-season awards as we enter this playoff push. Joining me on today's show, we have the commissioner of the ICHL and Tampa Bay Barracudas GM, Chris Smith. Chris, how you doing, man?
Good. Happy to be here again. How are you, Tony?
Doing much better than I was a couple of weeks ago. Let's just say that. You know, we actually were set to record this episode at the end of February, but we had a little bit of a medical emergency, but all is well now. Also joining us today, we have the GM of the Minnesota Mammoths, Matt Riegler. Matt, how you doing, man?
Doing very well, and I'm very happy to hear that you're doing well. Sorry to hear that you had a medical emergency, but you know, you're coming through, and that's what matters, man.
Absolutely. Also joining us today is someone that we've been trying to get on this show for the last couple of months, but we have the GM of the Edmonton Kodiaks, Ed Power. Ed, how you doing, man?
Fantastic. Great to finally be here. It should be fun. I enjoy the podcast the whole time. I've listened to every one of them. They're all great.
The praise is very much appreciated. We put as much as we can to these podcasts, and we're really glad that people are not only listening to them, but they're also enjoying them. And We are just so excited that we finally got you on a show.
Appreciate it.
We're just going to dive right into today's show. So we are actually getting ready to start week 8 of the NHL season. I mean, week 20 of the ICHL's overall picture. And we are closing in fast on a playoff push that is going to be very interesting and very intense competition for the 4 weeks of the playoffs. All the teams are going to be in it, but the question is, who is going to be taking the top seed in the conference? Right now in the West, you're looking at the California Wave with a 14-4 record, and the Winnipeg Winterhawks right behind them at 13-5. So before we dive into this discussion, though, I do want to seek a little clarification from Chris. Are the division champions going to be taking the top 4 seeds and then it's the rest of the league? Or is the division now really not a big factor when it comes to the playoff seeding?
So the division winners will be seeded top 4. Now, I haven't actually bothered to make sure that the divisions were set up properly. Division winners were the top 4 seeds in the standings so far. I was going to wait till just kind of the last couple of weeks of the season, probably with the next date of the standings. Probably whatever you see now that the podcast is out will show the division leaders in the top 4 seeds. Of course, you know, keep in mind that all 16 teams from each league will qualify for the playoffs. It's just a matter of where they fall. Top 4 seeds will be the division winners.
Right, and the rest of the league will just kind of fall in line like that. So basically like a traditional NHL playoff seeding kind of thing.
Yeah, except for the fact that we have 16 from each side going.
Right, I just wasn't sure.
I never bothered to make sure that they were in the proper order. So if they were before, it was purely by accident.
Okay.
The Southeast and the Atlantic are top 6 in the East.
Yeah.
Those two divisions are quite above the rest.
The competition is just so wild.
I was honestly surprised to see how close it's been this season compared to what we've seen in the past. I know there are a couple of teams that are struggling, but then, you know, there are a couple that have just kind of shot up. And I have to make mention, Tony, of your team, which is very much impressed me because of where you started during the AHL portion of the year to how you've kind of jumped to basically, if there were only 8 teams, you would be in the playoff picture as of week 18.
We had a lot of confidence going forward in our NHL roster, and we're really proud to see that we are at 5-1, but this week doesn't look like it's going to end up as a win for us, which is a little disheartening, but you can't win them all, so we're just going to move forward and make sure that we finish the season over 500, which was our goal from the very beginning of the season. We wanted an improvement on last year, and we're going to get it, even if we have to kill teams to do it.
Good plan.
Looking at the West, when it comes to taking the divisions and the conferences, do you guys see many changes happening within that? I'll throw this one to Ed first because he is Western competition. Do you think there's going to be much changes in where teams are presently falling?
I really don't. To be honest, I did my rankings just solely based on the NHL portion. I kind of dropped the ball on that one. But there's only a couple more weeks left besides the playoffs. So the Pacific Division, I think it's really wrapped up. The Winterhawks, I think, are going to stay on top of theirs. My own Mountain Division, I think, is going to be mixed around a bit. I don't say I'll stay on top of that there right now, the way things are going. And the Arctic Division is, I don't even know there. It's a pretty tight race there.
I think the only division that you may see some changes in who wins it is the Arctic Division, just because it is such a tight race. You have every team right now. It's 9-9 for the Sharpshooters and the Huskies, and then it's 8-10 for the Renegades and Narwhals. So that division is really the only one that is really wide open.
Of course, those stats are after 18 weeks.
Right, right. Yeah. But I mean, everybody everybody's within one game of each other. And so, I mean, it's really close in that respect. The Central could still shift a little bit since the Winterhawks and Outlaws are both top three teams right now.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Those divisions, I think, could still potentially change up a little bit. The Mountain, you still stand a pretty good chance to win, but Boulder's catching up.
I think they're down this week, but they just have such a solid roster. I can't really see them falling.
It's tough to count them out, but their goaltending has just been unbelievably bad this year, and I'm really surprised.
Yeah, really.
Because they're sitting on Rene and Quick, and those guys are just not putting up the numbers.
I know all about Quick's problems.
Barracudas. I got a question for you. Would you really count their goaltending out? I mean, we're still talking about Johnny Quick and Pecorine. Still talking about guys who, of the 48 games, are likely going to play 35 of them at minimum. Rene may play all 48 if he hasn't missed any games yet. At the end of the day, these are Vezina quality goalies. It's kind of a catch-22. Do you believe the season, or do you believe the history coming into the season with these two?
I think it's a really interesting situation, because I think the issue is, if you're looking at the two teams from a perspective, the support in front of both of those teams, in front of Nashville and in front of Los Angeles. LA has the offensive support right now to bail Quick out if he has those off nights. Nashville right now doesn't. Rene can stand on his head, but if his offense can't pull enough weight, then he's not going to be getting the wins, and that's what you're seeing right now. Now, Quick just had a slow start because the Kings had a slow start, but now that they've rebounded, Quick's starting to put up the numbers pretty well. Rene, they're kind of stagnating, and Rene doesn't have the support in front of him.
So we've established who Quick and Rene are, but there are a few guys out there like Emery, Reimer, and the guys out in Anaheim, Hiller and Foss, guys who aren't necessarily big-name goalies, who are solid options in goal this season. I think Emery has 10 wins or close to it. As a guy who has Hiller, I'm not upset about having Hiller at all. He's on the second best team in hockey right now. He is the one of the 1-1A. And I don't know that I wouldn't rather have that sort of situation over a guy like Pecorine, who's on Nashville. I mean, guys, I had Shea Weber last season. I didn't keep him because they did not just not do anything to make themselves better. They legitimately got worse coming into this season. We see it. That would wholesomely reflect on Rene, and it has.
Their defense just isn't putting up what it needs to. And the thing is, because Rene doesn't have that support in front of him, he cannot bail a team out every single night. He's going to burn out. That's not going to get you anywhere in the playoffs, if it gets you to the playoffs, even.
I couldn't say it by myself.
And that's obviously a tricky situation in Boulder. But, I mean, looking at the rest of the conference, I think where you're going to see the big shakeups happening, it's going to be relatively near the middle of the pack. Teams that are sitting at 10-8, 9-9, and 8-10. Because there's a lot of teams within that pack. And there's going to be a lot of games that remain that are going to be played between those teams that have a lot of impact going forward. And I think that's going to make for some really interesting seedings coming in the first round.
One of the interesting matchups that you'll see is an underseeded Huskies team. They're 4-2, the one game behind you right now, Tony, in the Arctic Division, and they are
tied with me overall.
Yeah, right smack dab in the middle. And we look at this roster, and it's got Vanek and Ovi, Pascal Dupuis, Girardi and McDonough, and Crawford in net, and it's got Spezza on reserve. Guys, this is a dynamic team. This is a team that can make a lot of hay come playoff time and are more likely to have the best part of their season as we hit the playoffs, because you have a guy like Spezza coming back. You'll have a guy like Corey Crawford, who will hopefully have had his, what we suspect is, concussion issues under control. When you get a guy like Spezza, a guy like Crawford, two keeper-worthy players back into the swing of things, if that's not a booster for your club, I don't know what is.
Thing is, Alaska is a team that definitely is scary, and they also have a couple of in-division games remaining on their schedule. They play Regina in week 22, and then in week 20, they're playing the Narwhals. They have big games coming up, and they're going to need big efforts from their guys to really stay on top of the division race. What's crazy about the Arctic Division is that it is relatively middle of the pack in terms of the rest of the conference, because you have, as of week 18's action, you have 9-9 Saskatoon, 9-9 Alaska, 8-10 Regina, 8-10 Northwest Narwhals. And they all play each other at least a little bit going in these final 3 weeks of the regular season. There's going to be, it's going to come down to the end to see who wins that division.
One interesting opponent that they're going to have, it'll be their second to last opponent, will be against Calgary. And right now, they're 4-2 in the NHL, and they are leading the Mountain Division over Ed and the Boulder Beasts.
However, his overall record is 7-11, so that kind of puts him far behind the pack.
I think that they are one of the biggest pretenders right now in terms of the division. Yes. Wow. So, dude, I think that they're goaltending. Brizgalov and Ellis. I don't need to say much more than that.
Yeah.
That's their goaltending. And their best shot blocker is Greg Zanin, who right now is averaging 3 1/3 points a game. But he's not putting any pucks in net or not helping do that either. He's got Jacob Voracek, who he's been in the league how long? And this is his first true breakout season. Maybe he does keep it going, but the best player that he has behind that is, take your pick, Jeff Carter, David Clarkson. That might come down to a coast bias. He traded Jonathan Toews for Jeff Carter, which later in the podcast I'd like to talk about. It's one of my biggest surprises in terms of asset management. Jeff Carter, yes, former 40-goal scorer, but he's the only one other than Kopitar that's putting the puck in the net for LA, and that's just not going to sustain itself. It's just not. He has the goal and assist record of a Cy Young Award winner of 17-2. And over the last 2 weeks, he's put in about a third of those, including 3 in 1 game. So the sample size over the course of this season so far looks really nice, but it's compacted. I don't see how that can be sustained.
Who comes to a lead this heavy in goals, he's pretty great right now.
There's one big difference to me, and these are his two biggest scores in Voracek and Carter. Now, I'm just looking over the last 30 days, and again, folks, this is on March 10th at 6 o'clock Eastern. While their total points is only +3 for Voracek, it's 74-71. Voracek has 10 goals and 13 assists. Jeff Carter has 13 goals and 2 assists. Voracek, as I said earlier to me, is not somebody who's going to sustain it, but if there's a reason to believe that he's going to sustain it, is that he's doing it without shooting the puck. Jeff Carter's sole value is simply putting the puck on net. And right now it's going in. But once that dries up, you're getting goose eggs out there. And when those are your two biggest scorers, that doesn't breed a lot of confidence in my mind.
I want to talk about the East Conference and taking a look at them. Their race is pretty tight right now too, with the Nighthawks presently sitting at 13-5, Blue Crabs at 12-6, and the Barracudas right behind at 12-6. The Sentinels propelled themselves right into the race with a so far perfect NHL season. Guys, what kind of changes, if any, do you think are going to happen out in the East to the standings?
First, we're going to see the Olympics surge. With the trade I just made with them, the upgrade in goaltending, I think, has been tremendous. I'm still a Rene believer, but I'm a believer in so much as is that he's going to be the star goaltender that's getting the opportunity, much like Andrei Pavlik. Between the two of them, they have 42 starts. Meanwhile, they only have 18 wins, but that's not the point. It's that they're getting the opportunity, as well as they have quality depth. And it starts with Corey Perry. You've got Ryder and Huberdeau, who I just traded to them. Solani and Zipnik Mihalik. This is a force to be reckoned with.
Chris, thank looking you. At the East, what are you thinking?
I don't see the Barracuda sticking around at the top very long. I need to do something that's going to help out the offense a bit. And the fact that the goaltending, too, hasn't been as great as I've hoped. Craig Anderson went down with an injury, so I grabbed his backup from Ottawa, just because they've been doing all right. But
did you grab Lehner?
No, Bishop.
I had Bishop for a bit too, and he was actually pretty stellar for me for the week or two that I had him.
I had been facing some issues with Brodeur going down, and I almost picked up Bishop, and I went, no, I'm going to put my faith in a rookie kid, and I went for Jacob Markstrom.
It's a good pick.
Guys, it's all about opportunity. The goalie is a bottom-line player. He either got the win or he didn't. And if he did get the win, was it a shutout? So that you want the guy who has the opportunity, period.
You can't get wins if you don't get starts. And the thing is, Markstrom is going to be the guy in Florida because Clemenson hasn't really inspired much confidence, and Theodore's probably done for the year, so he's going to get
this. This might not be the best year for him, though. But
no, probably not.
It'll be a good choice going forward.
I do have to say I am surprised, although I shouldn't be, about the Sentinels and their little run.
They're actually
since we moved to the NHL. Options. They have not lost yet since we switched back to their NHL roster.
They look like they could stay on and go 7-0 too.
Sure.
They've got the roster that can really put up the points. I mean, they've got Stamkos, Couture, Landeskog, Pominville, Setoguchi, and then their defense is pretty impressive, too, with Subban, Carlson, Girardi, Markov, and Hamonic.
That's a big team.
That's a huge team.
Tyson, Howard, and Ned. And I don't think that there's much of a reason, unless I'm finally able to pry Stamkos away from him, as I have been for two seasons.
I've tried to, because that's my biggest thing, being that the Barracudas are made up almost entirely of Lightning players. Yeah. And not only that, but I would have to say is probably he's easily the best player to have just because of the sheer number of points. Yeah. I think he's doing like 5 points per game average in terms of the fantasy points.
Exactly, so. Five.
Like, definitely a good guy to have.
So I was ready to trade like half my team for just Stamkos. At one point, I had said to him, "You don't even have to kick back anyone else to help me fill out the roster."
To be honest, I wouldn't blame you.
Imagine Stamkos and Taves. Oh,
that would be something. But again, I'm kind of looking at the middle of the pack because the thing is in the Eastern Conference, there is a huge group of this conference that is middle of the pack, sitting at 9-9 and 8-10. Basically, half the conference is sitting at that record. There's going to be some significant changes in the middle with these last 3 weeks of the season. I mean, with that many teams, there has to be some sort of shakeup here. I mean, I'm not sure where it's coming from. If it's the Guardians finally getting their act together, I'm not sure if it's going to be from the Olympiques with their new trade happening, with the Loggers and their high-powered offense. There's a shakeup coming within these teams, and I don't know where it's going to come from, but it's going to happen.
Chris, you know, you're sitting on top of the standings at number 3 at 12-6 overall, and you're 3-3 in the NHL. Where do you think the shakeup might come from?
I think the Guardians and Archers, I would be surprised if they don't kind of move out of that sort of hovering right around 500 area. But based on what I've seen from all these teams and the fact that there is so much parity in the ICHL right now, I would not be surprised if we have a lot of teams finish at 500. I mean, I don't really see that there has to be this opening of the floodgates and, you know, one team just starts winning them all, one team starts losing them all. I don't see it that way. I think that it really could continue like this for the last few weeks of the season. And I think we could see a lot of teams kind of finish even.
I completely agree with you, and particularly with the Archers. I mean, the moves that they've made the last couple of weeks, right. That team went from deep to deeper, and they're solid all the way through. This is an impressively constructed team.
This year's postseason is going to be unlike anything the ICHL has ever seen with all 16 teams going at it. Let's go ahead and move on, actually. We're going to be doing some midseason awards here. Now, we're going to be awarding for both conferences. These ones are for opinions of who we think are, so far, the GMs of the year, the biggest surprise, and the fantasy MVP. We're going to go ahead and start in the West Conference. Chris, who is your pick for GM of the Year so far out West?
I feel like as the commissioner, I should probably stay away from the GM of the Year for right now. I'm happy to comment on on what you guys come up with, but I don't want to seem like I'm playing favorites with anybody.
I understand completely. So then we'll go
to hurt their feelings.
Okay, oh, I don't mind hurting your feelings.
So we're going to go to Matt then. Who would you say is the GM of the year out West?
The California Wave and John Wolt. And before you get on me and saying I just took the number one team, that is part of it. When you have a team that starts off with Callahan, Kovalchuk, and Stamkos, I don't know how you do it otherwise, unless it's the team that you thought was going to finish in last, and they're actually distinctly mediocre. If you're able to construct a roster that starts off with those three, or even the top two, Stamkos and Kovalchuk, then you are doing plenty of things right, and you deserve to be spoken for.
He has 12 players right now with 3.0 plus fantasy points per game. That's impressive.
Yeah, and all his defensemen. Oh, I'm sorry. Zipnikmahalik is at 2.9. Thoroughly impressive.
It really is. I mean, I actually voted for John Wold as well. That roster, you just look at that and you just go, wow.
Yep. That's who I voted for as well. And I was very disappointed when the first week of the season I had to face them.
Unanimous decision for John Wold.
And what's great is that as much as we're a keeper league, you're only keeping four players. So yeah, the rest of this has to be built through drafts and trade.
I found it extremely impressive how he took the risk on Josh Georges. I know Georges wouldn't go very high in a regular draft, but he's extremely important in this league.
Because we're block shots, definitely.
Yeah, for him to manage to get him back and then keep going with everybody else.
He's got four guys with at least 60 blocks.
Yeah, that's crazy.
All right, John Wall, take a Twitter bow.
So who are you guys picking for the GM of the year out in the Eastern Conference? We'll start with Ed on this one.
They picked North Carolina just kind of for the same reason. They just consistent records. They're crazy winning streaks. I did have a close second just based on mainly the NHL for Washington. Simon?
Yep.
Just his bit of a turnaround from the NHL season he had last year. He might go 7-0 after this today. And just he hasn't made a single trade this year, so for him to use the waiver wire so efficiently is extremely impressive. Yeah, my main pick would probably be still North Carolina.
Riegler, who you got?
While I agree with everything that Ed said, 100%. I didn't want to make the same sort of pick twice, so I went, some might say, off the board, but I did give it to Chris for the Tampa Bay Barracudas, and it's for one very specific reason. He built this team with the same philosophies he built last year's team, and it takes a lot of guts to stick with a philosophy after it didn't work quite well the previous season, do it again this season, and
like
it is.
I like that you call it guts. I call it stupidity.
No,
I'm just
it's impressive.
I'm not learning. It's insanity. It's me not learning from my mistakes. Although I was surprised at most of this, you know, obviously the record that I have right now, I'm 500 since the NHL started, but most of the wins that I got were during the AHL. I picked a team that, you know, did win a championship last year with the players from another team. The Admirals actually won the championship, but then, you know, all those players moved to the Crunch because half my roster was, again, Lightning players or Lightning prospects. So, but it worked out luckily that time. I've tried to diversify my roster a bit, but I don't call it guts. I call it dumb.
Buddy, when you take a risk and it works, you're a genius. When you take a risk and it doesn't work, well, they got Idiot. Another word for that.
Exactly.
Chris, this took a lot of guts, and that's what impresses me the most is that you stuck by your guns.
So well, thanks. Take I appreciate that.
You know, coming up with the East GM of the Year was actually kind of difficult because there are a lot of really good candidates. I was going to say North Carolina. I think that they're doing absolutely fantastic work with the roster, but I would be remiss if I did not give my vote to Robert Ehrlichman of the Baltimore Blue Crabs because yes. He has stayed very consistent across both leagues. Across AHL performance and NHL performance, and he's just got an insane roster as well. Crosby Tavares,
it's
Hall.
Worth pointing out, of course, that he actually had an AGM in his place for the first half of the season. But, I mean, as far as NHL goes, he's been...
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, yeah, he did have the AGM in the AHL, but the thing is he's picked up his performance right where he left off, and right now he is leading the division with his 12-6 record to the Sentinels, 11-7. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's just incredible work that Robert's been doing, and like I said, I would be remiss to not mention.
He's the NHL point leader in the East, and you have to be a shrewd, wise, and devious GM in order to take the number one slot.
We're going
to
move through these next categories a little bit quicker here. In the West, what would you guys say is the biggest surprise? Start with you, Chris, since we haven't heard from you yet.
No, I'll take this one. It's your team.
Really?
The Sharpshooters. I mean, the troubles that you had kind of one after another, not your fault, just kind of things that happened to your team over the course of the first 12 weeks and how your team is just, I mean, you knew what you were doing when you built your NHL team and it shows and it's put you back up in a decent spot in standings. So that's my biggest surprise. I'm really impressed by that.
Wow.
Here, here.
For mine, I'm looking at another turnaround, but I'm not looking at mine. I'm giving it to the Vancouver Lumberjacks. Coming back from last season, that team was just so bad last year. Team this season is right in the thick of the discussion. They're 8-10, which is far more than last season's team could ever aspire to. And I question their strategy of blowing up the band at the beginning of this season when we were doing keepers and they kept nobody. Yeah. I openly question that strategy. And Jim is making it work. So for me, my biggest surprise, I've got to give it to the massive turnaround that Jim Hayden has done with the Vancouver Lumberjacks. That's my vote.
I have to agree with that.
Spiegler, what do you got, man, for your biggest surprise in the West?
Well, I took it in a slightly different direction. My biggest surprise, I mentioned this earlier, was asset management and in terms of trading in the West. There are some really strange trades going on in the West. You got Jordan Staal got dealt for Brad Marchand straight up. That is absolutely absurd. On the same level as Jeff Carter and Jonathan Toews going straight up for one another. You have two guys in Taves and Marchand who are clear keepers. And not just now, not just next year, the foreseeable future, probably even the long term. For guys like Jordan Staal and Jeff Carter who are not. They're quality players, certainly. I would love to see them in a blue shirt, but they're not keepers. When I look at the other trades like Krejci for Solani, Alfredson for Havlat, and a couple of the bigger ones, we saw Henrik Sedin, Alexander Semin, and Kiprasov for Thornton and Lundqvist. You just keep seeing either these.
That? I don't know who did that.
Well, the last one I just mentioned, it was the Cody. Oh, sorry. sorry.
It was a good idea at the time.
But was it? I mean, you traded two potential keepers in Sedin and Kiprasov for two potential keepers in Lundqvist and Thornton. And then you just threw in Alexander Semin, who's on the running gun Carolina Hurricanes, who he's going to always be playing with the star.
The way it was looked at was, I really needed an upgrade in goaltender because I knew Calgary wasn't doing the greatest this year. And Semin, I was nervous about to begin with anyways. His season last year was pretty terrible and kind of nervous this coming season. And Sedin, the assists in this league are not as important as goals. So the hot start that Thornton had, I kind of jumped on that bandwagon too quickly, I think.
And therein lies what we were talking about at the top of the show, which is, do you believe in the season or do you believe in the history leading into the season? And you made your choice, and Powers, you're still having a fine season, but this is all, in my humble opinion, and no, I am not a trade master, this is just asset mismanagement. It's either a lateral move or an underselling or an overtrading, and it's strange to me. I'll leave it at that.
Ed, what would you say is your biggest surprise?
Well, when I was doing my little sheet beforehand, I was, again, just thinking about the NHL portion. My surprise was actually Calgary, and I'm not sure if anybody saw the predictions I made at the beginning of the season. I kind of slotted them right at the bottom of the mountain. Looking at their roster, I really didn't think they would go very far. And Matt, you made a lot of great points earlier, so now I'm kind of nervous on them. But they went 4-2 right now, or possibly 5-2, I believe, as well. After those, they just shocked me all the way.
Calgary has put together some really impressive stuff as well. So, and then what would you guys say is the biggest surprise out east? I'm actually going to start with this one. For me, I'm just personally I'm floored over how good Washington's start has been. It's so unbelievable.
That is my prediction as well.
I agree with that.
It's just so unbelievable. I mean, you thought the Blackhawks had a good streak. Look at the Sentinels.
Hey, guys, well, what about Hartford? He's the new guy in town on this side of the board.
I got to say, the one of the best things about this league is the fact that it has blocked shots, and it changes the dynamic, and it's impressive for him to come in here and be so well when you have you don't look at the lower end players like Josh Georges and everything, and you don't even really want to draft them until you kind of realize. For him to come in and just do that right away is pretty good.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
You just look at the goal scorers and the assists and the points and everything, and you don't really pay attention to anything else.
And then real quick, let's go through our fantasy MVPs here. So, Chris, we'll start with you.
You're talking about players, individuals?
Yes.
I would have to say that you're probably going to have the same people in both leagues since we're using
I have the same for both, too.
But, yeah, obviously, yeah. I was talking about Stamkos earlier, and, the fact that he's averaging 5 fantasy points per game he plays, which is just phenomenal. He's got to be the most valuable player to have simply because of the points he puts up. But if you're talking about someone who is going to contribute in every stat category, Getzlaf. That's who I would have to go for.
I agree with you on that one. I actually went really different in my assessment of MVPs because I was taking a look at their point production and their situations. And I said for the Western Conference, I actually did do different MVPs for each conference. For the West, I said Tavares because he's putting up very impressive numbers on what could be construed as a subpar New York Islanders team. And then for the Eastern Conference, I did say Ryan Getzlaf as well because he's been a huge deal for the Arsenal. And he has been such an across-the-board producer on just about everything. It's tough to ignore him. And in fantasy points, he is 7th in the entire league.
I just went with, like Chris said, Stamkos, just hands down for me, just the goal-scoring ability, high-end goal-scoring points that this league sets out, stands above the rest for me.
And over here, I actually have a 3-way tie, but it'll be for fairly obvious reasons. The one megastar we haven't mentioned yet is Sidney Crosby.
He was my second pick, but I went for the goals over the mostly assists.
Totally fair, man. But when a guy is putting up multiple assists a night on average, two assists, two assists is one goal, and he's more or less doing that.
He has eight or nine 3-point games this year so far.
Exactly. So he's getting you the bunches, and that's part of what wins it for you. And then on the other side of things, since this has been such an injury-laden season, how can you look over Victor Fast and Ray Emery, who both have 10 wins on the season? Those are the two best teams in hockey right now. Well, record-wise, anyway.
And they're not. No one's talking about the backups.
Perhaps we should be.
I completely agree with that one. We're now going to move on to our final topic of the day. I'm actually going to turn this one over to Chris, who has some very special details to announce about the future of the ISHL and its latest endeavors. So, Chris, all you, buddy.
All right. Well, I'd like to get your guys' input on this, too. But the time you're listening to this podcast, you should see a blog post on the site, or maybe it'll go up the day after, regarding, obviously, the plan for how we're going to update the ISHL this summer. If you read the yearbook, you know that the plan was to rebrand or relocate a handful of teams and also create third jerseys for some more. I finally have that plan in place for what we're going to do. We're going to start it in 1 month, April 13th. It's going to be 13 weeks of R&R in 2013. That's not rest and relaxation. It's relocation and rebranding for the handful of teams. And again, we're going to use 13 teams as our base. We're going to start with 13 teams that are going to be eligible for moving around. And this is a list I created based on, as commissioner, what I would like to see stay in our league in terms of logos and team names and everything, and what I could live without. Now I'm going to turn it over to you guys to vote as far as what you think should stick around and what should go. And of course, if there's popular demand, there are certain teams that weren't on my list of 13 that you guys would like to see rebranded or relocated, then that's definitely going to be an option. Just to run down the list real quick, the 13 teams that are going to be eligible to be rebranded in some way are going to be the Atlanta Arsenal, the Boston Colonials, Calgary, Dallas, Detroit, Hamilton, Minnesota, Montreal, New York, Regina, Saskatoon, Vancouver, and Washington. From that list, again, not all 13 teams are going to be rebranded or relocated, but they are the ones that will be eligible. We're going to do polls for these 13 teams. And then, of course, the voters will get to decide what we actually move forward with. From that group, 7 of them are going to be eligible to relocate, move to new cities within North America. And that includes the Arsenal, Cavalry, Outlaws, Motorheads, Renegades, Sharpshooters, and Sentinels. And then for the relocation vote, it's not just going to be a 51% win. We're going to do a 60% majority just to make sure that a big group is interested in seeing these teams be relocated from where they are. Because I think 5 years into this, I think a lot of people have kind of started to like what we have and kind of get comfortable with it and not want to see too much change. But you never know. Maybe I'm wrong. So that's why we'll do these polls.
I like the consistency with all the logos and teams and everything. So I don't want all of them to change, but it's nice to refresh it every now and then.
I agree. And I think that's my goal here is, we'll have 13 teams that'll be eligible, but I don't see us actually going forward with all 13 actually being changed. And of course, even if some of them do get changed, we don't have to have huge changes. In fact, Eric Poole, who designed the logos for the Boston Colonials, has already sent me revised versions of his logos, kind of cleaned up and modernized a bit, from 5 years ago. And they're really great looking. And so I could really see that as just moving forward with a slightly updated logo that way. Same colors, same basic idea, just a bit of an update. So that runs for 13 weeks from April 13th until July 13th. Notice the 13 theme continues throughout the whole summer. Once we finish that, July 13th is the end for one project, the start of another one, 13 third jerseys in 2013. So we're going to have 13 teams potentially get new third jerseys. Well, there will be 13 that will get it. We'll put up a number of the teams for a vote, and the top 13 will get to have third jerseys added. So we'll do a jersey design contest over the summer too. And of course, whatever teams, if we rebrand any teams or relocate them, we'll have to get new jerseys for them too. So plenty of stuff for our concept artists to work on this summer as they feel like.
I was going to ask you if you have any artists, other than our friend doing the Boston Colonials, do we have any artists to expect material from? And which cities you personally would prefer to move to?
Right. Well, I don't know of any other artists who are definitely going to get involved, though I'm sure we'll see a lot of people. I'm not going to commit anyone to it by saying any names right now. I know Eric has already submitted his work. But one thing I did want to point out is that when we do our third jerseys, a handful of them, 3 of them actually out of the 13, with the kind of highest percentage of people who want to see third jerseys for this team, we're going to hand those off to sort of hire 3 designers, as in instead of just, anybody can submit a jersey design. What we're going to do instead is, instead of voting on a slew of designs, you'll vote on artists. So basically, we'll pick one particular artist to do this one team, and we'll pick another artist to do this one team. So basically, whatever they do, you're going to have to live with. But the idea is to kind of put one person's vision to work. Someone will pick a concept artist that you really like based on, you know, the voting, and then whatever they come up with will be the design. So this will be good for the artist because they won't have to struggle against this huge group of a dozen different jersey designs. So voting would work this way. We'll give you a list of artists with links to their portfolios. You look at their online work samples, see what you like the best, and vote based on that, what kind of work they've done in the past. And then we hand the work off to them to design the jersey. But I think that'll be kind of a neat way to shake up the way we do this and make it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I cannot wait to see this.
Yeah. And as far as cities, I know we're talking about relocation. So up to 7 teams could be relocated. There are certain cities that we're just not in as far as this league is, including the capital of Canada. Ottawa doesn't have a team. Philadelphia is a pretty big North American city, doesn't have a team. San Francisco. So there are a number of cities I could see moving to. Moving to
Toronto.
And that's another thing I want to talk about is that I do get a lot of emails from people and tweets. How can you have a fantasy hockey league based in North America and there's no Toronto team? In fact, there is a Toronto team. They're just called Hamilton. The Steel Cats, the team that, you know, we decided 5 years ago that we placed in that area, came down to a runoff between two names, which were Toronto Tritons and Hamilton Steel Cats, and Steel Cats won. So essentially we have the team in Hamilton, but that was the team that was meant for the Toronto area. So that's just the name it got. So I would like to see that one be rebranded, if for no other reason than just to put a Toronto name in there. So that is another thing, of course, that I want to limit. One of the things that, you know, I did when we started, the way we set up the divisions was so that we wouldn't have too many teams in the same place. We don't want to have three New York teams. You know, there's just no need to do that in a league like ours where travel isn't actually a problem. So we just want to be able to represent geographical areas. That is one thing I won't allow to happen is to have like a second team in Toronto or a second team in New York or anything like that. We'd like to see some other places represented because there are plenty of other cities that haven't gotten a team yet that we could certainly add on. And even that even takes into account two expansion teams we added last year with the Yellow Knife and Hartford. Back to the Third Jersey Project, that'll run for about a month starting July 13th. And ending August 13th, we should have it all wrapped up with all the voting of the jersey designs and everything. From there, we'll do the next yearbook for the 2013 season, and that should come out on September 13th, if I can get my act together, so we have our 13th theme going throughout the entire summer.
I'm already excited about the yearbook.
I've got lots of big plans for it. So yeah. I know last year I talked about trying to get that one printed, and then there were just problems that popped up that I couldn't get worked out, so that never happened. But I would like to be able to offer people the option of being able to purchase an actual physical copy of the book just to have.
That would be fantastic.
But that's my plan, at least for the next few months for the ICHL.
I cannot wait to see the designs. That's always been one of my favorite things, is watching the designs that come out of this process, because there's so much unique stuff going on. And
a lot of creative people that visit Aesthetics, and they really...
Oh, tons!
In the summertime is when I really like to do this, because there's no NHL to follow, so you're not too busy watching games and going to games. You know, a lot of our readers and our really creative people have time to kind of sit down and crank out some neat designs. So I'm really excited, too, to see what we come up with.
That's going to about wrap it up for this week's episode of the show. Coming up later this week, Chris, do you have anything coming up this week that you want to divulge any details about? Or
not really. One thing I did want to say before we wrap up is we still have the second sale of the Milwaukee Loggers jersey available
right
now, and that's through March 17th is the plan right now. So if you didn't get one the first time around, you have another chance, probably your last chance. So if you don't get it now, don't count on getting one ever. That's one thing I wanted to say. And you know, of the four of us who are on the show right now, of course I have one, and Matt, you have two actually. You bought two.
Yes, I did. Name and number and all.
You want to convince anyone out there to pick one up for themselves?
Yeah, and I'll give it to you in 3 points. The first off, guys, this is an extraordinarily unique opportunity. We are taking fantasy and bringing it into the real world. It doesn't get any better than that. It's a collaborative community effort that not only the four of us have put effort into, the other 28 members of the league, and thousands of votes. If nothing else, it's a fantastic keepsake.
Go to aesthetics.info. There's a link probably on every page. You can pick up the Loggers jersey from the guys at Rink Gear, also known as Geeky Jerseys, and they have it for sale from now, I believe, until March 17th. We may push the date back, but I'm not sure about that. So if you want it, I would get it by the 17th.
Guys, I'll throw in one last bit. It is $100 for a real sewn jersey.
Less than $100.
Everything is sewn on. This is an authentic hockey jersey. The best kind of quality that you might get from National Hockey League. Not the melted on crap that you'll spend $150 on. This is real deal, Holyfield. Go get this jersey.
I second that.
I third it, even though I've never owned it. I've also got a blog post coming out a little bit later this week. There's actually a section we skipped that's talking about stat-based awards. So this post will be detailing what teams in the ICHL have the best offense, defense, goaltending, and special teams. So look for that. And additionally, on the fantasy blog, you can now look forward to weekly score recap. That's right. We are starting ICHL recap, which will be recapping all the previous week's action and giving you a preview of what's to come in the next week or so. Now, this is going to be something that we're rolling out starting this week. So if you guys haven't listened to it, head over to the fantasy blog and have a listen. Additionally, if you want to follow the league offices are available at aesthetics.info. You can follow both West and East.
I almost forgot. We just did a bunch of voting recently where we decided that the Hartford Mariners jersey was actually going to be the next one to be produced by Rink Gear. That's still in the works. That's still going to happen, but we just wanted to get through another round of Loggers jerseys first. Make sure that everyone who wants one gets a chance at one, and then we'll move on to doing the Mariners jersey. But that's still happening. It's not off the table. It's still being worked on, but we just wanted to do another round of Loggers first. So anyway, that's all I wanted to add. Go ahead, Tony.
That's going to do it for this week's show, the ICHL podcast. Matt, thank you for joining us on today's episode, man. It was a pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Absolutely. Ed, thank you for finally joining us.
My pleasure. It's good to be here, and hopefully it won't take as long to get me on the next one. Whenever I can.
And Chris, once again, thank you for joining us and giving us the opportunity to pick your mind as the commissioner of the ICHL and giving us all the information about the new project coming up. I can't wait to see this rolled out, despite my team being up for relocation and rebranding. But that's neither here nor there. I'm really excited to see what happens.
But, and let me tell you this, as a GM, you are well within your rights to start a campaign to tell people not to vote for relocation, to try to keep your team in town. You can start your Save Our Sharpshooters campaign and write it all over Twitter, and we'll look forward to it.
Camp outside the arena?
Call your shots. Save your sharpshooters.
Ooh, we got to make that into a slogan right there. That's a hashtag.
If you make a banner ad, I'll put it on the website.
You heard it here, folks.
I am learning how to use Photoshop, so we'll see what happens.
You can hire one of our talented concept artists to help you out there.
Exactly, because I can't even draw a straight line with the help of a computer. That's going to do it for today's episode. Once again, everybody, thank you for listening to the show. We will see you guys next time. The music on today's episode of the ICHL podcast was brought to you by Overclock Remix. The opening track was Shoto Spirit by Sean and James St. John, and the closing is Ragol Weather by Zircon. Both tracks and over 2,500 more can be found at ocremix.org. Thanks for listening to the ICHL podcast.